Again, he could have prepped this. He's called Tony. Tony like you, says Felicity. I approve. Keep it in the family. And what would he like to do? He read about influencers doing adverts, says Tony. This bit he's remembered. How does that all work? How does it work? Muses Felicity. How does it work? That's the million-dollar question. Literally, I hope, says Tony, and there's that laugh again. But seriously, as the expert, how does it work? Well, says Felicity, as the expert, lots of ways, really. She's being quite secretive, avoiding the questions. Tony will report this back. But what, like, says Tony. So a company has got, like, a drink or a hi-fi or a Walkman, and they come to you and you give them an influencer? Pretty much, says Felicity. You've hit the nail on the head there, Tony. And what would he get paid? Says Tony. I mean, says Felicity. Six of one, half a dozen of the other, you know? Tony nods. He does know. Something he won't share with Steve is how much he likes what he sees. How easy it seems to be to talk to Felicity Wollaston. Spies mustn't fall in love, though. It's the first rule. Do you have any of his work I could look at? Felicity asks. Are her eyes blue or grey? Whose work, sorry, says Tony. Remain focused, fella. Look sharp. Tony's work, says Felicity. Tony's spy work? Didn't bring any with me, I'm afraid, says Tony. But can we look online? Says Felicity. If you have it, says Tony. Felicity laughs again. Tony didn't even know he was being funny this time. Felicity just seems to bring it out in him. You have a very nice smile, Tony, says Felicity. It would really work on camera. That's a professional opinion. Thank you, says Tony. Thank you. You have a very nice dress. Thank you. And face. Felicity smiles again. Wow. Tony wants to invite her to the pub. Have a bit of lunch. Talk about something else. But he knows he can't. He hasn't got a single piece of information out of her that he can pass on to Steve. The only information he has gleaned so far is that there is a picture of a man on her desk, but she is not wearing a wedding ring. No, he has to stay here and ask more questions about her agency. Be professional, Tony. What would James Bond do? I was wondering if you'd like to go to the pub, says Tony. Get a spot of lunch? He sees Felicity freeze for a moment. Of course, he's been an idiot. Tony realises she was just laughing to be polite. She said he had a nice smile to be polite. She's got a lovely guy waiting for her at home with a big dog and all his hair. Sorry, says Tony. Of course not, you must be very busy. Stupid of me to ask. Felicity thinks for a moment more, then leans forward. Tony, can I tell you a secret? You're not hungry? Guesses Tony. Well, that wouldn't be a secret, silly, says Felicity. Tony, I feel I can trust you. You can, agrees Tony. Everybody can. Felicity looks around her, trying to form her thoughts into words. I'm not busy, you see. I'm never busy. I don't really do anything. Okay, says Tony. I don't really know what I do anymore, or what my company does, and I've been thinking lately that it would be very nice to talk to someone about it.
I see, says Tony.
And then in you walk, says Felicity, with your lovely smile and your big hands. She doesn't do anything, doesn't actually know what her business is. Tony is dimly aware that Steve will want to know this, but for the moment, he's too busy looking at his own hands. Shall we? Says Felicity, standing. There's a posh pub, or there's the Crown, where you can get a shepherd's pie. Shepherd's pie for me, says Tony. Unless you... Shepherd's pie is perfect, says Felicity. Absolutely perfect. Tony Taylor smiles. It is a reminder that, sometimes in life,
You really should risk the traffic.
Chapter 49. Rosie is driving them to see Nelson Nunez at Bluff Point. As expected, her name did the trick. Nelson had announced he would be delighted to see them at 9 a.m, so here they are, bright and early on a Sunday of all days, on their way to a drug dealer's home. She turns off the coast road and onto a rough track. The house is nearby, she knows that, but it is nowhere to be seen. Drug dealers, like celebrities, will pay a great deal of money for privacy, and often for the same reasons. So someone steals your blood, presumably Joe Blow, sends it to Lou Bay, and there you are, says Steve. You're physically present at every scene? They've got me, says Amy.
But no one's going to believe you killed them, says Rosie. Why would you?
They won't need to believe it, says Steve. If there's solid proof, there's solid proof. So we need some proof of our own that somebody else did it.
Rosie looks at Steve in the rearview mirror. This guy can really fill out a suit. He is sweating fairly profusely, but these things can't be rushed. She takes the next bend much too fast, because where's the fun in doing anything else? And finally sees high iron gates set into a stone wall. On the gates are three signs. One says, guard dogs on patrol. The second says, trespassers will be shot. And the third says, St. Lucia welcomes careful drivers. Rosie winds down her window and presses the intercom button on a security post. There is a quick back and forth, and the gates swing open. As she continues down the driveway, a Land Rover emerges from bushes to her right and settles in behind her. Mounted in the flatbed of the Land Rover is a machine gun, currently manned by a young man in a Coldplay t-shirt.
Welcoming committee, says Rosie. That's nice.
I'd hate to see what happens when he's not delighted to see someone, says Steve.
They'll frisk me for my gun, says Amy. Rosie, you take it.
You think they won't frisk me? Says Rosie.
I wouldn't, says Steve. Never say never, Stevie, says Rosie, leaning her arm around her seat to take Amy's gun.
The house comes into view now, pretty enough, white wood and painted green shutters.
Smaller than you think, says Amy, for a big-time drug dealer.
Rosie pulls up on a tarmac strip at the front of the house. The main doors swing open, and a man who can only be Nelson Nunez steps out onto a wide porch, carrying a tray of glasses and a pitcher of orange liquid that, to Rosie's trained eye, looks lethally alcoholic. The drive home will be even more fun. Rosie, Amy, and Steve exit the car. Rosie has hidden the gun where she has hidden many things over the years. Not easy in a jumpsuit. It is a testament to the trust she has in Amy that she didn't even double-check if the safety was definitely on. As Steve walks around the car to join Rosie and Amy, she sees Nelson's face change.
There are three of you, says Nelson.
They look at each other, as if to confirm this.
My friends, says Rosie, Amy and Steve.
They take their drinks.
Okay, says Nelson, clearly thinking something through. Then we have a problem.
The Land Rover pulls up behind Rosie's hire car, and the young man in the Coldplay t-shirt jumps down. Nelson looks at him, and then looks at his guests.
Well, he says, come in. I'm sure we can sort this out between us.
As Rosie walks up the two steps to the porch, she sees Nelson give a slight nod to the boy from the Land Rover and receive a slight nod in return. She is glad, not for the first time in her life, to have a gun.
Chapter 50. From the desk of François Loubet.
Chat GPT, rewrite in the style of a friendly English gentleman, please.
I'm still here.
Don't you worry about that.
Patience beginning to wear thin, but these things are sent to try us. Further correspondence has arrived from my pal, Joe Blow.
Monsieur Loubet,
You do not have to kill Amy Wheeler. She is no danger to you. This has all gone too far, Joe Blow. Sometimes you simply have to laugh, don't you? What else is there to do when confronted with this buffoonery? Of course I have to kill Amy Wheeler. Goodness, it's like explaining things to a child sometimes. I declare it to be so. You see, Amy Wheeler was the bodyguard who worked for me in London, the capital city of England. She was very diligent, by all accounts. When I decided to order my, let's not be coy here, killing spree, I needed insurance. I hired Rob Kenner. That's one layer of insurance. He has no idea who I am. I then also needed to choose a handy scapegoat, because I always do. And Amy Wheeler was perfect. She worked for Maximum Impact. She was a trained killer. And I could always find out where she was. Bad luck for her, but good luck for me. Just the way I like it. Granted, these are not the sort of murders that get looked into too closely, mainly because they were all carried out by local police officers. But if someone did decide to investigate properly, they would soon find an easy culprit in Amy Wheeler. I was able to source her blood, and it has been placed at each scene. If I wish to draw attention to it, the police won't look any further than that. She has no motive, of course, but with her blood at all three scenes and her proximity to each, no jury is going to worry too much about that. Even her friends and family might think twice about her guilt. Could she have? Would she have? Insurance, you see. However, there is one person in the world who knows for a fact that Amy Wheeler didn't kill the three influencers. One person who would never buy that particular story. And that person is Amy Wheeler. So what's the harm in taking care of her? Putting a bullet in that little noggin of hers and moving right along. Nothing to see here. You see, alive, Amy Wheeler is a nice little insurance policy, but insurance doesn't always pay out, does it? The moment she dies, I shall alert the authorities that they might like to cross-check the blood samples at the three scenes, and, what do you know? They can compare it with the recently spilt, still warm blood of her fresh corpse. Dead? She is the end of the story altogether, so you see why I'm anxious to get that sorted out once and for all. My understanding is that she is still yet to die, but it is all in hand. Jolly good. I should hope so too. Rob Kenner knows her death is a priority and knows the penalty if he fails. And now I really think about it, after Amy Wheeler dies, I should probably find out who Joe Blow is and have them killed too. These are all loose ends for another day, however, as my mind is already on other things. All ties must be cut with Maximum Impact, that's very clear. But I do plan to keep using influencers to smuggle my money. There seem to be an awful lot of them about. Vivid Viral Media, the company Joe Blow and I have been using for this scheme, is fully under my control, so I have decided to keep using it and find my influencers there. There's always another fool around another corner.
Chapter 51. You're not really supposed to have your phone on school premises. They tell the kids not to bring them in, so it does look bad when the adults do. Some of the teachers pay no attention to this rule. They glue themselves to their phones every break time in the staff room, quickly hiding them and tutting if a child knocks on the door. Bonnie would love to be brave enough to do the same, but as a teaching assistant, she feels she doesn't have the status to be able to pull it off. But equally, when you are checking for likes and waiting for news, you do have to look at your phone sometimes. And this is why Bonnie is in a cubicle in the girls' toilet outside unicorn class when she gets the news she's been praying for. The email is not from Felicity, which is what she would have expected, but instead from a bookings committee. Would Bonnie be free to fly to Sao Paulo in Brazil on Thursday to film a 3-minute promotional video for an organic paint brand? Non-negotiable fee of £20,000. Please confirm. Bonnie rereads the email, then re-rereads it. Perhaps she's getting it wrong somehow. Brazil? £20,000? This can't be right.
£20,000 will change her life. She checks again. It must say £2,000, surely. Even that is beyond her dreams. But it doesn't say £2,000. It says £20,000. As quietly as she is able, Bonnie starts to cry. She's thinking of the friends who encouraged her, who told her to dream her dream. How close she came to ignoring them, to thinking that things like this don't happen to people like her. Even on the morning she visited Felicity Wollaston, she'd nearly turned back, thought better of it, doubted herself. Imposter syndrome, her best friend had called it. The feeling that you're not good enough, that you don't know enough, that you're not worthy enough. But Bonnie had swallowed her fear and got on the train. And now here she was, heading to Brazil with an unimaginable amount of money coming her way. Mum will look after the kids, she's sure of that. And as for her job here, well, she loves the children, even likes a few of the teachers, but they will all understand when she hands in her notice. Some of them will even be happy for her. Organic paint. Bonnie hadn't realised that paint wasn't already organic. She should have been aware, she supposes. She will do some reading up. Hi, I'm Bonnie Gregor. I'm just in Brazil, enjoying the sunshine. I try to get out here 2 or 3 times a year if I can, just to top up my tan. Note to self, book spray tan. And I'm hopping on Instagram to let you know about an insane new product I think you're going to love. A lot of people don't realise that paint isn't organic, and I guess, to me, organic is so important. That's why I was excited to come across, note to self, find out the name of the paint. XXX paint. No chemicals, no E-numbers, no artificial colourings, just paint as it should be, natural, fragrance-free. There is a knock at the door, and a young child says, I really need the toilet. 1 minute, says Bonnie. Okay, says the young child, doubtfully. Bonnie feels bad, but these kids do wee themselves an awful lot, and this is a special occasion for her. What will she wear? They'll probably tell her, won't they? And she can treat herself to a new top or two now, can't she? Her sister-in-law, Clarissa, went to Barbados last year and didn't stop going on about it for months. Bonnie can't wait to see the look on her face. But no, that's mean. She texts her mum. Thank you for believing in me. I love you, Mama. Bonnie reads the email one final time. She dreamt her dream, and it has come true. She replies to the email. Dear Bookings Committee, thank you. I would like to confirm. Where will I need to get a plane from, and should I book somewhere to stay? What is the name of the paint? Sorry for so many questions. Yours sincerely, Bonnie Gregor. She presses send and knows that, thanks to Vivid Viral Media Agency, her life is about to change forever. Chapter 52. It all happened quickly, as ambushes are wont to do. The moment they had stepped into Bluff Point, the young man in the Coldplay t-shirt stepped up behind them, with his gun raised, and Nelson Nunez did the same from the front. You'd never get this sort of thing from someone in a Van Halen t-shirt, thought Steve, before being ordered to lie face down on the ground. Steve and Amy are now lashed to kitchen chairs. Rosie is also strapped to a chair, but has avoided being frisked by saying, Please feel free, I think you'll find exactly what you're looking for in my knickers. Nelson genuinely looks upset. Not especially angry, but not especially evil, for a man who has a machine gun mounted on a Land Rover. Just upset. Steve has seen the look sometimes in armed robbers who thought it was unfair that they had been caught. But Nelson holds all the cards, so what is upsetting him?
I was told you were on the island, says Nelson to Rosie.
By Ferdy, says Amy.
By someone else, says Nelson. He asked me to tell him if I found you.
You found me, says Rosie. I don't suppose it was a disgruntled Russian chemicals billionaire.
It wasn't, says Nelson. At least I don't think so.
So it's not Vasily Karpin, says Rosie, then looks at Amy.
I had honestly forgotten he was threatening to kill me.
Seems a long time ago now.
What's the problem here, Chief? Steve asks. Time for him to prove his worth. Man to man. Let the women go.
The 70s called, Stevie, says Rosie.
It wants its attitudes back.
Sorry, says Steve. Even as he was saying it, he knew it would get him in trouble. It was sort of sweet, though, says Rosie, and I appreciate it's a minefield for your generation.
It really is, thinks Steve.
Okay, says Nelson. Here is my problem. I've been offered a lot of money to kill one of you.
Okay, says Steve. But, continues Nelson,
I don't know which one of you I'm supposed to kill.
There is a silence, which suggests that Nelson is looking for a reply. Sorry, you want our help, says Amy.
Here is the information I have, says Nelson. Rosie D'Antonio is coming to the island, and you must not, under any circumstances, kill her.
Yes, says Rosie.
Right, says Steve, and looks at Amy.
Steve can see Rosie sawing at the cable ties behind her hands with her nails. $500, she said her last manicure had cost. Time to see if it was money well spent.
But he said that Mrs. D'Antonio...
Miss D'Antonio, says Rosie, still sawing.
That Miss D'Antonio would be with somebody and that he would like that person killed.
Okay, says Amy.
And now two of you are here, says Nelson. So you see my problem, I think. Who do I kill?
Again, it looks as if Nelson is looking for an answer.
Both of them would be the obvious answer, says Rosie, wouldn't you think?
Steve gives her a questioning glance. Amy doesn't react.
I think you are right, says Nelson. I'll only get paid once, but it can't do any harm, can it?
Problem solved, says Rosie. Steve assumes that Rosie is going somewhere with this, but he doesn't yet know her quite well enough to be absolutely certain.
But, says Rosie.
Phew, thinks Steve.
What would you do with me afterwards? You see, you've been expressly forbidden from killing me, and yet I will know that you killed my friends, and I will, of course, hunt you down and have you tortured and then murdered. I am fabulously wealthy, and I thrive on revenge.
Listen, says Nelson,
but then seems to be unable to follow this up.
Who is asking you to kill one of us? Steve asks.
I just get messages, says Nelson, nodding towards his phone, from a guy in Dubai.
He told you he lived in Dubai? Amy asks.
Anyone who lives in Dubai tells you they live in Dubai, says Nelson.
I don't suppose his name is Francois Loubet? Amy asks. Nelson doesn't react, but Steve can see that he knows the name. He also sees that Nelson is sending a message.
What happens if you don't kill any of us? Amy asks.
If I don't kill any of you, says Nelson, and then takes a moment to think. Nothing happens to me.
It's just you don't seem like an assassin, says Amy, and I know a lot of assassins.
I'm not an assassin, says Nelson, his tone very reasonable. I'm just, you know, a regular criminal and politician.
Well then, says Rosie.
It just seemed like easy money, given you were coming here anyway. All I'm really supposed to do is hide a gun for someone else who's coming to kill you. One of you.
Problem solved, buddy, says Steve. Untie us and we'll be on our way. Nelson nods for a while, thinking this through.
Okay, so I let you go and we're cool. This never happened.
We're cool, says Amy. Never happened. Nelson nods, happy with that deal. And then his phone buzzes. He looks down, reads, and then smiles.
On second thoughts, forgive me. I know who to kill now. Blonde woman, early 30s.
That was very good timing for me and very bad timing for... He looks at his phone again. Amy Wheeler.
But you're still not an assassin, Nelson, says Steve. He needs to keep this conversation going for as long as possible.
I know, says Nelson, but come on, all that money for one little bullet.
Steve sees that Rosie is so nearly through the cable ties, but she's not going to make it. He thinks back to his conversation with Ferdy earlier when he gave the driver his tip. Rosie plays for time too.
You'll still have the two of us to worry about.
Nelson bobs his head for a moment, weighing this up.
I saw you driving up here, he says. Very fast, on very dangerous roads. I think we can wait for sundown and see if you don't drive your car over a cliff. Terrible accident. No trouble for me. No trouble, only money.
Nelson, says Amy, you recognise the name Francois Loubet?
Nelson shakes his head at Amy. He then nods to his young bodyguard.
The boy points his gun at Amy, closes one eye and squints along the barrel.
The time has come.
Steve's nails, often bitten, never softened or filed, never bathed in ewe's milk or coated in Ecuadorian honey, have done the job that a $500 manicure could never manage. He breaks free of his ties, thrusts his hands inside Rose's jumpsuit, pulls out the gun and fires. He has never fired a gun before, but after the deafening gunshot, the young man in the Coldplay t-shirt is moaning in pain on the ground, a bullet hole through his shoulder. Steve, now in a crouching stance, gun raised, looks at Rosie and Amy. Amy has a look of shock, whereas Rosie's look is... what? Surprise and lust? She breaks free of her ties. Nelson makes a run for the door. Steve stays in his crouch, shoots and hits Nelson in the leg. He goes down too.
Have you ever shot anyone before? Rosie asks Steve, while snapping through Amy's cable ties.
No, says Steve, but the Coldplay t-shirt made it easier.
Rosie nods down at her jumpsuit.
You know that means we're married now.
Steve stands over Nelson and offers his hand. Nelson is in a great deal of pain, as is his bodyguard.
Let's get you both to a hospital, shall we? Says Steve.
Plenty of time for that, says Amy. He's got a good 4 hours before he bleeds out. So maybe a few questions first.
Steve drags Nelson to his feet and helps him over to a sofa. Amy slings the young bodyguard over her shoulder and dumps him next to Nelson.
Tell us about Bella Sanchez, says Amy.
Nelson looks blank. The girl who got murdered at Emerald Bay, says Amy, with a bag full of money.
I don't know anything, says Nelson. I know a girl got murdered. That's it.
Amy motions for Steve to hand over his gun. Steve shakes his head. Amy gives him a withering look. Steve rolls his eyes and hands it over. Amy takes the gun and holds it against the whimpering Nelson's left temple.
I don't believe you, says Amy.
Tell me everything you know, or I pull the trigger right now.
Steady on, Ames, says Steve,
then turns to Rosie. This is why we always let her win ball games at Christmas. Amy hasn't taken her eyes off Nelson.
Somebody is trying to kill me.
Me too, says Nelson.
Rosie laughs, then mouths a silent sorry to the furious-looking Amy.
Forget these two, says Amy to Nelson. I'm the one you have to worry about here. If I shoot you, it won't be in the leg.
Who's your guy in Dubai?
I don't know, says Nelson, and tilts his head towards his injured bodyguard. Can we get him to a hospital?
Steve can see the bodyguard slipping into unconsciousness.
Amy, says Rosie, I trust you know what you're doing. There are a few things in life I haven't tried at least once, but I don't want to add killing someone to the list.
You've never killed anyone, Steve asks. I'm actually surprised.
A Danish pop star once had a heart attack in my hotel hot tub, says Rosie, but that was different.
Amy looks at her watch and says, He's fine.
He's my nephew, says Nelson. My sister will kill me.
Not if I kill you first, says Amy.
Who killed Bella?
A local cop, says Nelson. Put a speedboat right after.
Anything else?
They found blood at the scene, says Nelson. But it didn't match no one.
There we go, says Steve. Amy nods. Okay, I need you to send your friend a message.
Anything, says Nelson.
Tell him that Rosie D'Antonio and Amy Wheeler are flying to Alaska.
Okay, sure, okay, says Nelson. Alaska.
No, says Steve. Eddie's not going to fall for the same trick twice. Tell him they're still holed up at Emerald Bay. A little truth will keep Eddie on St. Lucia longer than a big lie.
Amy nods.
Okay. And do it while I'm watching. Amy watches Nelson key in the message. Steve is still thinking of Nelson's reaction to the name François Loubet. Satisfied the message has been sent, Amy picks up the unconscious nephew once again and carries him over her shoulder. Steve helps Nelson to his feet, and Nelson drapes an arm around his shoulder.
I don't think Nelson is going to report us to the police, says Amy. Let's get Coldplay to a hospital, pick up our passports and head to the airport before Eddie Flood shows up to waste his time at Emerald Bay.
Who do you think is messaging you, Nelson? Steve asks.
If you had to guess.
It's François Loubet, isn't it?
Nelson gives a small laugh.
You don't think so?
I'll tell you one more thing, says Nelson.
Go on, says Steve.
François Loubet.
You know him? Steve asks.
I got a message from him once, says Nelson.
And, says Amy.
And whoever he is, says Nelson. He's not a French guy called François. That message was from an English guy, for sure.
Steve, his arm around a drug dealer he has just shot, has an idea.
Chapter 53. Eddie Flood gets ready to disembark from the Piper. St. Lucia looks beautiful, but then Hawaii had looked beautiful too, and look how that turned out. Eddie ended up having a drink with Barb in one of the airport bars. No hard feelings. She gave him some amphetamines to help him get over his jet lag and to prepare him for the flight to St. Lucia. Eddie yawns with real intent. In his head, Hawaii and St. Lucia were fairly near each other. A 2-hour flight, maybe. Hopefully even shorter. He certainly hadn't expected a 13-hour flight. Hawaii was a quick ferry ride from California, right? It's America, after all. Looking at the map on his phone, he could sort of see it now, though. Of course, the 13-hour plane journey had had its upsides and its downsides. Downside? He is arriving in St. Lucia nearly 20 hours after Amy Wheeler and Rosie D'Antonio. Upside? He has had plenty of time to work. He's been looking into bribes, police corruption, that sort of thing. The sort of money it takes to get the police to work for you. He closes his laptop and packs it away. Private jets are pretty good for concentration. Eddie recognizes, though, that the downside of the unnecessary journey was worse. If he doesn't kill Amy Wheeler this time, then, old friend or not, Rob Kenner might decide he is surplus to requirements. And that would be bad timing, given Eddie's plans. The door of the plane folds down in front of him, transforming itself into steps. At the bottom of the steps, a taxi awaits. Eddie needs to pick up the gun, then find Amy Wheeler. Again, if she's travelling with Rosie D'Antonio, that shouldn't be a problem. Eddie very much hopes that she is. As he reaches the bottom of the steps, the driver offers his hand. Eddie shakes it.
Eddie, says Eddie.
Ferdy, says Ferdy. Welcome to St. Lucia. Eddie's phone buzzes. Rob Kenner is the only one who knows the number.
Found her. Emerald Bay Resort. If you lose her, I'll bet any money she'll head to Dublin next.
Dublin. Quite the tour Amy Wheeler is taking.
Where can I take you? Ferdy asks.
Emerald Bay Resort, says Eddie. You know it?
Sure, says Ferdy, laughing. Been there once or twice.
Great, says Eddie. You take a lot of people there.
Lot of people, confirms Ferdy. Lot of people. Stallone once.
Eddie nods. Rosie D'Antonio?
Rosie D'Antonio.
Eddie sees that Ferdy is now studying him in the rearview mirror. The writer, says Eddie. My favourite. I read somewhere that she comes here.
Sure, says Ferdy.
She was staying there, but I drove her back here an hour ago. She's flying to Fiji.
Fiji, says Eddie.
It's an island, says Ferdy. She's researching a book. So Rob says that Rosie is at Emerald Bay, and suddenly a random driver says she has gone to Fiji. Why does Eddie feel like he's been given the runaround again?
You know what, says Eddie. Is there a bar at the terminal? I need a bit of thinking time.
Sure, boss, says Ferdy.
Whatever you need.
Having just sat through a 13-hour journey, Eddie is not in the mood to mess around. He opens up the Flight Stats app on his phone and checks the three most recent private jet departures from the airport. Fiji is nowhere to be seen. So why is this man who recently drove Rosie D'Antonio and, presumably, Amy Wheeler, lying to him? One of the most recent flights was to Charlottesville, one was to Bogota, and the third? Well, the third, which took off just 45 minutes ago, was to Dublin. Nice try, Amy Wheeler, nice try. This time, Eddie has got them. Game on.
Chapter 54.
Rob Kenner knew his luck would change. Someone had been trying to fool him, but Eddie saw through it, and he is now on a flight to Dublin. This one is costing Rob another fortune, but it will pay him back handsomely. You see, this is why Rob had gone to Eddie. It's going to take a proper professional to kill Amy Wheeler. This woman knows what she's doing. If you need some average Joe off the street killed, you can hire another average Joe to do it, like that South Carolina cop who stole some of Lube's money. They would have had to kill him anyway, but he made it a lot worse for himself, that one. But a special target like Amy Wheeler calls for a special killer. But Nelson had been right. They had stayed at Emerald Bay. It didn't lead to anything, but Rob will send Nelson a thank you fee anyway. It pays to keep in with good people. The murder business is a relationships business. Relationships like Eddie Flood. Eddie grew up on the same streets as Rob. East London when they started out, then Soho when the stakes got a little higher. Eddie was the best. He had no flash, no ego, took no joy in his work, just worked for the paycheck and made sure he earned every penny of it. He really could have gone places, Eddie, but he didn't have Rob's ambitions. As Rob built his empire, the two men drifted apart. No reason why Eddie shouldn't be right here on this golf course, nice villa on the Arabian Gulf. He had the brains, the skills, but he didn't want it enough. Rob wonders what Eddie does want, what other people want. Rob watches as Big Mick smashes his ball off the tee. His swing is crude but effective. There's another man who lacks ambition, who's happy with his lot. Must have made a million or two, surely, and then just thought, that's it, that'll do me. Rob can't understand it. Enough is never enough.
You know what I do for a living, Mick?
I heard you were a DJ, says Big Mick. Apart from that, I don't want to know.
You never fancy being a billionaire? Rob asks.
What for? Says Mick. You'd never be able to spend it all.
But you could look at it, says Rob. And other people could look at it.
Rob bets that Francois Loubet is a billionaire. Must be.
Also, it had wiped the smile off my dad's face.
There it is, says Mick. Proving something to your dad. You never will.
They have reached the green. Rob lines up his putt. It's nice talking to Big Mickey Moody. Rob's putt rolls 2 feet past the hole. Mickey Moody is lining up his own putt.
I never knew my dad, you see. My two grannies brought me up, and they'd be proud of me whatever I earned. Taught you right from wrong, did they? Says Rob. Taught me to work hard, says Mickey, as his putt curls into the hole. Strong women.
Yeah, says Rob. Nice putt. Maybe I should quit while I'm ahead.
Do what makes you happy. That's my advice, says Mick.
What makes you happy?
Huh, that's a good question.
Rob holds his putt, and the two men walk to the next tee. Rob's phone buzzes again. It's Nelson Nunez. I'm coming to Dubai. Can we meet? Nelson Nunez is coming to Dubai.
Purpose of visit.
Rob sees the three dots dancing.
Diamond Conference. Gems are one of my many sidelines. I have a proposition for you. You'll like it.
Rob Kenner senses money. The feeling rises in his chest. Of course, that's what makes him happy. And that's okay. People like his dad, people like Eddie, people like Big Mickey Moody would never understand it. That drive. That was okay. There were others that got it. People like Francois Loubet and Nelson Nunez. And they were the people who kept him in business. Chapter 55. So what did they know now? The same woman picked up both Andrew Fairbanks and Bella Sanchez from the airport. Both were carrying identical bags, and both influencers were murdered, then left on display. In Ireland, they will try to discover if the same is true of Mark Gooch. As for who Francois Loubet might be, they hadn't found the answer in St. Lucia, but they know that a man in Dubai has been tasked with killing Amy by any means possible. As for Nelson's Francois Loubet theory, knowing he isn't French hasn't exactly narrowed things down. Steve has also received a message from Ferdy, telling him that Eddie Flood is on his way to Fiji. So that was one less thing to worry about for now. Poor Eddie. You had to feel for the guy. On the flat screen TV is Tony Taylor with the rest of the Brass Monkey crowd, Dr. Jyoti Das and John Todd. Jyoti is the only one who seems to know how to use Zoom properly. Guys, says Steve, I'm so sorry I might miss the quiz this week. I hate to let you down.
You're solving a murder, mate, says John. Don't even think about it.
So will Tony take my place? Steve asks.
So you've got some information, Tony, says Amy, keen to hurry things along, about Vivid Viral, something that could help us.
Tony on the quiz team, laughs Jyoti. Come on, we love him, but come on.
She's right, says Tony. I'm not a thinker.
Do you work with your hands, Tony? Rosie asks, taking a long drag on her cigarette.
What's the information, Tony? Amy asks. Something that helps the case?
So who will you get on the team this week? Says Steve. Not Mildred, from the cottages.
Bloke called Martin, just met him, says John. He's a loss adjuster from Lymington. Boring, but knows his capital cities.
Knows everything, says Jyoti.
So, Tony, starts Amy one more time. I don't like the sound of him, says Steve.
Needs must, says Jyoti. He is very good.
You've been up to Letchworth, Tony, says Amy. We're on a tight schedule.
He knows it's not permanent, right? Says Steve. This loss adjuster. He knows I'm back next week.
Rosie looks at him.
Oh, we're wrapping all this up by then, are we, Stevie?
We better, says Steve.
Martin knows it's temporary, says Jyoti. Amy decides she might just let this play out. She guesses they will get to Letchworth and Tony's information when they're good and ready.
Martin,
says Steve, shaking his head, riding in on his white charger.
He gets it, agrees John. He knows it's a lucky break, but he understands it can't last. Make sure he does, says Steve.
So, says Amy, are they finished?
This is the most mad show I've ever seen you, Steve, says Rosie, and I've seen you shoot a drug dealer.
You shot a drug dealer, says Tony.
Only in the leg, says Steve.
Still, says Jyoti.
Yes, still, agrees John.
So, Tony, you've been to Letchworth, says Amy. I wonder if you have information that could lead to me not being killed?
Of course, sorry, Amy, says Tony, finally focusing.
Felicity says she's making a lot of money, but she can't understand where it's coming from.
Do you wear oily overalls in your job, Tony? Asks Rosie.
Not now, Rosie, says Amy. How much is she making?
Felicity says, starts Tony.
Felicity says, repeats John and gets a punch on the upper arm for his troubles.
She says, Tony continues, she's making about 40 grand a month, has done for the last 2 years.
What would she normally make? Asks Steve. He's got a bit of colour from their St. Lucia stay, albeit the colour red. Should have upped the SPF.
5 or 6, says Tony, in a good month.
She was ready to jack it in.
Amy and Steve are both writing this down, and she doesn't have to do anything.
Forward a few emails, says Tony. Lots of post arrives for lots of different companies, but someone picks that up. She met with a new influencer the other day, but that's not usual.
Amy has a good guess as to what's going on here.
So it's a front. Someone is using her.
She's very bright, says Tony.
But Andrew Fairbanks was on her books, Amy asks.
And Bella Sanchez and Mark Gooch.
Steve sent me the names, says Tony, and she hadn't heard of any of them. Went through her emails and everything.
Rosie levers herself up from the sofa.
Can I get anyone a tequila?
We're working, Rosie, says Steve.
Yes, please, says Amy.
She is more relaxed now she knows Eddie Flood is about to be 10,000 miles away. Rosie goes off to raid the drinks cabinet.
I can't believe that's really Rosie D'Antonio, says John.
Believe it, Johnny,
Rosie shouts as she pours tequila into shot glasses.
So someone is paying Felicity a lot of money to use her company, says Steve. Clients are being booked by the company, but she knows nothing about them. And she hasn't spoken to anyone about this.
I don't think she's had anyone to speak to, says Tony.
Until now, says Jyoti.
She must know it's dodgy, says Amy.
I think she's been kidding herself, says Tony. She's a very moral woman.
Sorry to hear that, Tony,
says Rosie, sitting back down again with 3 shot glasses of tequila. She and Amy knock theirs back. Steve pushes his to one side.
Okay, says Amy. We need Felicity to send us everything she has. Accounts, emails, everything. Whoever's using her company as a front has killed 3 people and is trying to kill me.
I'll ask her, says Tony.
Who do you think it is? She won't be in danger if she sends you her records.
Tony, says Steve. The people she's working for have sent 3 people to their deaths. So you have to think maybe she's in danger either way.
They could kill her, Tony asks.
Seems to me like they could kill everyone, says Rosie, returning to the sofa with 3 more shots.
Except you, says Amy, because you're a celebrity.
What if the story ends with everybody dead except me, says Rosie, downing her shot. Hell of a final scene.
I love it.
You'll keep Felicity safe? Tony asks.
We'll keep everyone safe, says Steve. Is there anything else she can tell us?
What did Felicity say about the one in prison? John asks Tony.
Which one? Replies Tony.
The one in the prison in Dubai, says John.
The influencer stopped at customs.
Weren't you telling us about it earlier?
I don't think Felicity told me that, says Tony.
What girl? Amy asks.
Can't remember the name, says Jyoti.
Kylie?
She got 10 years. Dubai. Smuggling something.
Amy sees Steve on his phone.
He's gone from being a man who was scared to turn his phone on in mid-air a week ago to a man now using a burner phone with Wi-Fi at 25,000 feet. Courtney Lewis, he asks. 10 years, Alawir Prison, Dubai. That's the one, says John. All connected.
Courtney, Kylie, says Jyoti. I see what I was thinking.
And she's connected, Amy asks. Felicity seems to think so, says John. OK, we're on it, says Amy. Rosie is pouring more shots. Amy hears Tony say, I don't remember telling you that, but it gets a little lost in people saying their goodbyes. So perhaps we should go to see this Courtney woman in prison?
We can't get to Dubai anytime soon, says Steve. We're going to need a few days in Ireland.
Then I thought, maybe I'd head back to Axley for a day or two.
We don't need to go to Dubai, says Amy.
Why? Asks Steve.
I'm just going to send a text to the newest member of our team, says Amy, downing her shot.
Chapter 56. Adam Wheeler has had a successful day. Meeting after meeting, listening, writing things down, thinking things through. He sold a stake in a Singaporean cinema chain and bought a stake in a South Korean AI software startup. And he had a nice sandwich for lunch. He's flying to Dubai on Tuesday, where there's a diamond conference. It's a good place to chat to a few of his clients. By and large, people enjoy chatting with Adam because he listens more than he talks, and he usually makes them money. Amy was supposed to be joining him in Dubai, but her contract with Rosie D'Antonio has been extended. It's a shame. He misses Amy, but he understands her work, and she understands his. They both have things to prove, and they need time and freedom in which to do it. She's with his dad, apparently. Adam wonders why. There will be a reason, but the last few days have been too busy for him to spend time thinking what that reason might be. Some of his colleagues, the brokers, the senior analysts, the traders, are going out tonight. A meal, casino, the men picking up women, the women picking up men, or whichever way around works for them. It's a free-for-all. That's his world. Put in the hours, reap the profits, buy watches and cars and houses, sleep with anyone and anything that moves. Cocaine, ketamine, whiskey, money, money, money. Adam is going to get room service and watch a film on his laptop instead. He's downloaded Rampage 5. He might have a gin and tonic from the minibar, although it's £12. One of his colleagues, Wanda, bought a Rolex last time they were all in Singapore. £25,000 for a watch. Back in London, she wore it on an evening out, and a teenage boy on a moped with a gun took it off her. Adam is no apologist for teenage criminals, but if you're going to wear £25,000 on your wrist, then, in Adam's view, two crimes have been committed. Adam loads up Rampage 5 on his laptop. He had thought the Rampage movies were Jason Statham, but now he sees that it's Max Highfield. Not as good as Statham, in Adam's opinion, but probably the next best thing if Statham is unavailable. The Jean-Claude Van Damme to Statham's Schwarzenegger. Adam remembers Max Highfield starting out. He was a minor character in a soap opera, had an affair with someone or burned down a laundrette or something, so perhaps that stops him from taking Max Highfield seriously as a Hollywood A-lister. Not that someone like Max Highfield would ever care what someone like Adam thinks. Wanda is married to a guy Adam knows from his banking days. She's also having an affair with a Finnish hedge fund manager. Adam doesn't like to judge, although honestly, he can't help but think that sort of life must be exhausting. He doesn't get casinos or infidelity. Why earn money just to lose it? And why look for love just to betray it? Adam has been very smart with his money. Amy doesn't know exactly how much he has put away over the last few years, nor, Adam knows, does she particularly care. But he's looking forward to telling her one day. Adam has also been very smart with his love. When he and Amy met, neither was in the right place for a long-term relationship, each travelling the world, Amy punching people, and Adam looking for value in zinc derivatives. By rights, the whole thing should never have got off the ground. But both knew what they had found in each other. They discussed things openly and honestly. Amy had no interest in settling in one place, in nesting, raising a family, getting a mortgage, painting a living room and being a wife. But, she stressed, she wanted to stay with Adam forever. Adam, for his part, agreed. For now, any sort of traditional marriage would be a disaster, but equally, the thought of spending the rest of his life without Amy was unthinkable. So what to do? On Adam's laptop screen, Max Highfield is driving a sports car underneath a moving aeroplane. Highfield's wife, as far as Adam can follow, has been kidnapped and is on the plane. He is shooting at the fuselage, which seems foolhardy to Adam if his wife is on the plane. The plane then takes flight, and Max Highfield lets out a roar of anger. Not bad. Years ago, when Adam was more junior, he was on a desk that dealt almost exclusively in options. If you think a particular stock is going to rise in the future, you simply make a bet, a call option, allowing you to buy that stock at a predetermined price at a future date. He had explained this to Amy in the context of their relationship. They could both take out a call option on each other, if they felt their love was likely to grow, but they didn't currently have the emotional bandwidth to commit to each other. Amy had said that this was quite unromantic, but she was also of the view that romance was overrated and so was happy to hear more. Adam further explained that taking out a call option on their relationship was an incredibly efficient way of leveraging their emotional investment, while also representing their faith in a directional bet as to which way their love might go. At this point, Amy had said that this was actually too much information, and Adam had agreed. They had kissed, and Adam had asked if Amy would like to meet his mum and dad. But from that day, they both understood the contract. They loved each other. They would have a life together, but they would do it when they were good and ready. They married. Amy had held him at his mum's funeral. Amy formed a bond with Adam's dad, which was great news because Adam had never quite been able to do it. And they travelled the world, counting down the days until they were ready to cash in on their love. So theirs was a fairy tale that might not have started with a once upon a time. They are both confident it will end with a happily ever after. Back on his screen, Max Highfield has just thrown a hand grenade out of a helicopter. Perhaps Adam will ask Amy whether she's ever done anything similar. He had been looking forward to seeing her in Dubai. They are both self-reliant, that's for sure, but there are evenings when he aches for her. Come on, Adam. It's every evening. Now Max is killing the helicopter pilot, so one assumes that he is a qualified pilot also. Adam's phone buzzes, a message from Amy. His heart pulses at the sight of her name. So silly, really. Will you be in Dubai on Tuesday? Adam pauses the film. Max is kicking a hole in the windscreen of the helicopter for no reason that Adam can fathom. He replies, land at 9-ish, Dubai time. Perhaps she is coming after all. Job finished. Another message. Do you mind going to the Alawir prison? So she's not finished. Prison in Dubai? Well, that's a good question. I mean, he wouldn't choose to go there. But Amy wouldn't be asking without good reason, would she? Yes, I'd love to. Do you fancy a chat? I'm between meetings. Can't right now. Drinking tequila with your dad. Dad doesn't drink tequila. He does now. You need to talk to a Courtney Lewis. She's there on smuggling charges. Let her talk and take notes. They're expecting you. Are you going to be in meetings all evening? We could chat later. Adam looks at his laptop. There is literally nothing to be gained by kicking a hole in the windscreen of that helicopter. He would love to speak to Amy, but he doesn't want to seem needy. He can sense she's busy. I'm going to be stacked back to back this evening. Ames, can I ask you a question? If the question is, do I love you? The answer is yes.
Well, likewise, but I really wanted to ask if you've ever thrown a hand grenade out of a helicopter. Also, yes. Take care, my prince. Should I give your love to your dad? Say hi, yeah. So now he has to go to a Dubai prison. But he's doing it for Amy. In Adam's business, that's called breaking even. He Googles the prison, while Max Highfield rides a snowmobile over a waterfall. Chapter 57. Steve has never liked flying, even back in the days when he wasn't so frightened of everything. He thinks about the facts of the situation. He is travelling at 600 miles per hour, high in the heavens, in a metal tube whose upkeep and safety are in the hands of a series of human beings, some of whom, statistically, must be going through a divorce or a battle with addictions, or perhaps missing sleep because of a new baby or an old worry. Given that Steve knows all these things, he's surprised at how calm this plane feels, almost serene, as it cuts a smooth path through the dark night towards Dublin. He's surprised about the calm he feels, too. Rosie is asleep on a sofa. Steve places a blanket over her. Rosie asleep has a vulnerability that you never see in Rosie awake, or she never lets you see. Everyone is vulnerable. For some people, for Steve, it comes out as fear, avoiding situations where the vulnerability is exposed. For others, for an awful lot of people these days, vulnerability comes out as anger, pushing away anything that feels like it might pierce their shell. Steve watches people on TV sometimes, shouting the odds about this, that, or the other, railing against the truth of reality, and he always sees the pain first. They have lost someone, or they never had someone, and so now they have lost themselves. Rosie hides her vulnerability with her brilliance. The brightness of her light is all that you can see. But lying on the sofa, in the same sleep as the rest of us, Steve sees her. My God, it is peaceful up here. That might be the tequila talking, but Steve can't help but feel it. He is far from home for the first time in a long time. The safety of his routine has been left behind in an empty house. It must be echoing off the walls by now. Up at 8, feed Trouble. Watch the news with Trouble curled on his lap as if he hasn't just been sleeping all night. Weetabix for breakfast, sometimes with berries if he's remembered to buy them. Walk to the shops, buy the paper, and maybe something for tea. Say good morning to the people whose routines coincide with his. Home. Quick crossword. Sudoku. Let Trouble out when he meows with the plaintive sorrow of 1,000 dying sons. Then let him back in again immediately. Lunch at the pub. Good friends. Variable conversation. How safe that all makes him feel. But how small his world has become without his noticing. Up here, with the world,